Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report for today. It is Wednesday, July 27th, 2022. The schedule for this show is not usual because of the mini conference fundraiser preparations in advance that we have to do. We have to move things around. So today I've got a very special guest. Again, because of the things that are happening in the background, different time periods of recording and stuff. But Aaron Brickman is with me, and you're going to want to stay with me this entire show, because everything you thought you knew about the death of the dollar, and I've talked and written extensively about this, I'm telling you right now, you will see things a little bit differently. There is hope. Contrary to what other people say, there is hope. And there's a lot of things at play right now. You know, I was speaking with my guest, Aaron Brickman, right before airtime. And he said this. Well, you know what? Before I get into that, I want to mention, because I was talking about the mini conference. The mini conference will be available on July 30th. That's in a mere 3 days, I believe July 30th. It could be August 1st, or are we dead, Eric the Tech? Are we dead set on July 30th? Okay, everything looks good for July 30th. All right, I just want to make sure, because sometimes, you know, there might be a little thing that's just us saying, but no, I'll tell you what. The information that you will get from this conference slash fundraiser, the Egyptian alien and alien connections in the Americas, is going to fit in with what you're seeing take place today. This was literally written in stone thousands of years ago, being seen for the first time only by the people who sign up for this mini conference. Now, this is something you can download and you can watch again and again and again. It's not going to go away. It's pre-recorded. All right. There is a PDF file that has the images of the objects. This is the stuff. Some of this stuff, or the writings, I should say, are the things that Russ Dizdar and his fine team and myself, I'll throw myself in there too, working together, we found these writings and we couldn't match them to anything present or historical until a series of events took place and it was found to be this ancient angelic writing. And once translated using supercomputers, man, I'll tell you what, everything opened up and it gives us insight into today. This is so critically important, I believe, because it tells us not just the past, but the present and the future and why things are happening. You will see this and you will just say, my goodness, everything I thought I knew was wrong. I have never been more impressed by a piece of work, by a series of works, excavations, how everything just came together. It's got God's mark, God's hand on this. It really does. So I would urge everyone to go to HagmanReport.com. That's HagmanReport.com, two N's on Hagman, and click on the link and become part of this. Pre-register. Be ready for the unveiling on the 30th. And be prepared to get blown away. You're going to be looking at this and saying, oh my gosh, there it is. It's undeniable. I would feel comfortable taking this into a court of law if I had to and present this as evidence. without any problem whatsoever. The authenticity, the chain of custody, the preservation, and of course the value. All right. The intelligence value, I should say. All right, a couple things taking place right now. I want to mention this as well. Alex Jones right now, there is a, I don't even want to say a court. There's a court thing taking place. It's a kangaroo court is what it is. You remember Sandy Hook, of course, the tragedy, the absolute horrific things that happened at Sandy Hook. Well, Alex Jones has been made the fall guy for that. And the parents had sued Alex Jones. In a nutshell, folks, you can read about this. However, the media is taking only parts of this and pushing this out. But the bottom line is this. They are attempting to bankrupt and to really destroy Alex Jones. I mean, literally destroy everything he's worked for. This is not a prosecution. This is a persecution. This is lawfare, and it's happening right now. And you may say, well, he made some mistakes, or you might not like him, or whatever the case might be. But I've got to tell you, my heart, honestly, my heart goes out to this man. And the reason I say that is because he's not getting a fair day. He's not gotten a fair day in court. And I don't care if this was even an enemy of mine. Everyone deserves that fair day in court. Everyone deserves a fair shake in the justice system. If you're accused of something, you deserve that. All right? That Alex Jones is not getting that. He's being absolutely torn apart. And they've already decided his guilt. The judge has already decided he's in default of what he was supposed to do, which is wrong. So wrong, because he provided. Look, I know the backstory. I'm not going to get into it, but please keep him in your prayers. You might say, I don't like him, but you know what? It could be you in that seat. And I pray to God that never happens, because I've been on both sides of, well, I've been on the wrong side of what I call lawfare, okay? I've been the victim, in my view, of lawfare. And it's, I'll just say this, the process is the punishment. It will upend, or it could, has the possibility to upend your entire life. From your personal life to your professional life, and it's just a horrific thing. So please keep Alex Jones in your prayers, and everything that all the people in InfoWars. Again, even if you don't like them as Christians, I think we have to be fair-minded, and that's just my view. Okay, that's just my view. But what I see taking place right now is even worse than the Soviet Union. The show trials going on right now, including the January 6th trials or January 6th hearing. That's just so wrong on many levels. With that, very quickly, before I bring on my guest who's going to talk, last week, folks, in case you don't remember this, Aaron Brickman was on with Steve Quayle last week, and the foundation was laid. The biblical foundation was laid for where we're at financially, the clash of two financial kingdoms. Now we're going to be talking about what's really important. I mean, that's important, but now we can move on, I should say, and talk about the depth and breadth of what's taking place today and what he expects, Aaron Brickman expects to happen, because this man knows that of which he speaks. I'm telling you right now, he's walked the walk, he's lived in the business world, and he knows what's taking place. So I would pay very close attention to what he's going to say. Before we do, three things of note about the show trials. This is video three, if we can cue that up. This is the longer of the three videos, but this is important. This is Merrick Garland talking about his intent based on the January 6th committee, the hearings, what his Department of Justice is going to do. The end result here, folks, is, and I believe this to be true, is to keep President Trump off the ballot. And not only that, to keep others off the ballot that are closely associated with President Trump, as well as to prosecute and persecute those closest to President Trump under the pretext of insurrection that never happened. The insurrection happened on November 3rd of that presidential election. It wasn't the 6th of January, but the very same people behind that insurrection of removing a president because he was going to implement, I believe this to be the case, implement that Schedule F executive order that would allow for the firing of the members of the deep state, that among other things, they're going after him. And folks, we're only just getting started on that. So if we can just play very quickly this clip, listen to this, watch this, but listen to this, pay close attention. Here it is.
Accusations his office hasn't moved swiftly enough to build cases against those near the top of the ladder, and telling me concerns over further tearing the country apart would not deter his office from holding those criminally responsible accountable. Let's start off and talk about January 6th. We've just watched weeks of some pretty horrific testimony about what led up to January 6th and what happened that day. Just as an American, can you tell me what your impression was of what we heard?
It's an important part of democracy that every American recognizes the truth of what happened on January 6th and in the time surrounding it. I think that this is an important part that we not downgrade or suppress how important that day was. And I think that the hearings did an extremely good job of reminding us, and for people who didn't know in the first place, telling us how important that day was and what a risk it meant for our democracy.
Is the committee offering you anything in terms of an informal roadmap? Are you learning things you didn't know?
The Justice Department has been doing the most wide-ranging investigation in its history. And the committee is doing an enormously wide-ranging investigation as well. It is inevitable that there will be things that they find before we have found them. And it is inevitable that there will be things we find that they haven't found. But the Justice Department has from the beginning been moving urgently to learn everything we can about this period and to bring to justice everybody who's criminally responsible for interfering with the peaceful transfer of power from one administration to another, which is the fundamental element of our democracy.
You said you're moving quickly at this. There's been a lot of criticism, a lot of pressure that the DOJ is kind of behind the power curve here, behind the committee, not moving quickly enough on what appears to be solid evidence in some cases.
As I said, we have been moving urgently since the very beginning. We have a huge number of prosecutors and agents working on these cases. It is inevitable in this kind of investigation that there will be speculation about what we are doing, who we are investigating, what our theories are. The reason there is this speculation and uncertainty is that a fundamental tenet of what we do as prosecutors and investigators is to do it outside of the public eye. We do that for two important reasons. One is to protect the civil liberties of people and events that we're investigating. And the second is to ensure the success and the integrity of our investigation.
Would a criminal referral from the committee carry a lot of weight? Would it be welcomed by the Department of Justice?
So I think that's totally up to the committee. You know, we will have the evidence that the committee has presented and whatever evidence it gives us. I don't think that the nature of how they style, the manner in which information is provided, is a particular significance from any legal point of view. That's not to downgrade it or disparage it. It's just that that's not the issue here. We have our own investigation pursuing through the principles of prosecution.
You said in no uncertain terms the other day that no one is above the law. That said, the indictment of a former president, of a perhaps candidate for president, would arguably tear the country apart. Is that your concern as you make your decision down the road here? Do you have to think about things like that?
Look, we pursue justice without fear or favor. We intend to hold everyone, anyone who was criminally responsible for the events surrounding January 6th, for any attempt to interfere with the lawful transfer of power from one administration to another, accountable. That's what we do. We don't pay any attention to other issues with respect to that.
So if Donald Trump were to become a candidate for president again, that would not change your schedule or how you move forward or don't move forward?
Say again that we will hold accountable anyone who is criminally responsible for attempting to interfere with the transfer, legitimate, lawful transfer of power from one administration to the next. How is your—
And there it is. There it is. And there is the, and there's the target, Donald Trump, President Donald Trump. And I'm telling you right now, this will not end well. All right, they already arrested Steve Bannon, put him on trial, convicted him in a D.C. court. Where does he appeal to? The D.C. Appellate Court. Right? There it is. D.C. Appellate Court. Peter K. Navarro, they arrested him when he was cooperating. Roger Stone, pardoned, however, but nonetheless was in the crosshairs of the DOJ. Think about this. Next up, President Trump and everyone close to him in the circle. And by the way, this doesn't stop there. It stops with, and it will not stop there. It will stop perhaps with the silencing of the alternative media platforms, such as, not limited to, InfoWars and this platform. I will say again, and this platform. Folks, we need to pray. All right, quickly, two other things. I've conducted numerous interviews for prisoners, Rikers to Attica. You know that, all right, in my career. I've conducted numerous field interviews of people. I've watched them talk. I'm certified in forensic analysis, including behavioral analysis, among other things. I want you to take a look at this very, very brief clip of Mr. Joseph Robinette Biden from yesterday. This is one you have to watch if you're looking at behavioral analysis. You have to watch this. You tell me what you don't see. Go ahead and play clip A or clip one.
The Capitol Police, the D.C. Metropolitan Police, other law enforcement agencies were attacked and assaulted before our very eyes. Speared, sprayed, stomped on, brutalized, and lives were lost. And for 3 hours, the defeated former president of the United States watched it all happen as he sat in the comfort of the private dining room next to the Oval Office. While he was doing that, brave law enforcement officer subject to the medieval hell for 3 hours, dripping in blood, surrounded by carnage. Face to face with crazed mob that believed the lies of a defeated president. The police were heroes that day. Donald Trump lacked the courage to act. The brave women and men in blue all across this nation should never forget that. You can't be pro-insurrection and pro-cop. You can't be pro-insurrection and pro-democracy. You can't be pro-insurrection and pro-American. There can be no greater responsibility than to do all we can to ensure the safety of our families, our children, our community, our nation, and our law enforcement officers. I will always meet that duty, just as you do every single day as members of a critically important organization.
All right, folks, out of that segment, what didn't you see? Eric the Tech, you want to take a stab at it? No.
Because I have the show notes.
Oh, yeah, that'd be unfavorable.
You didn't blink.
All right. If you are ever speaking with someone or talking with someone or interviewing someone and you see that behavior, there are other indicators there, but specifically the lack of blinking by this person. And I use that questionably. you've got to immediately test for pharmaceuticals. Absolutely. By way of blood in your analysis. I'm going to tell you, whatever is happening there, there was one edit, one hard edit. But whatever's going on there, that based on my experience in field interviews, there is some pharmaceutical use, heavy duty. And I'm not talking about, you know, NyQuil or DayQuil or whatever for the sniffles. I'm talking about some neurological substances. There's something not right. One last clip, and then we're going to get to the guest, Aaron Brickman. I'm so excited for this. This is what I call the Hostage Harris video. Watch this. Too quick for Eric. I'm sorry. Actually, I didn't give him enough time. This is in a meeting yesterday, just to set this up. She's sitting at a table with other females, all of them masked. And it's being recorded. Why? I don't know. Here it is.
Good afternoon. I want to welcome these leaders for coming in to have this very important discussion about some of the most pressing issues of our time. I am Kamala Harris. My pronouns are she and her. I am a woman sitting at the table wearing a blue suit. And
all right, the only thing missing from that is her holding up today's newspaper, again, for a hostage video. Did you notice her looking at the color of her suit? Now, in and of itself, that has some meaning too, as well, behavioral analysis, from a behavioral analysis perspective. But the fact of the matter is for her to stay, to sit, and some people will dismiss it saying, well, blind people need to know or whatever, subtitles don't work in this case. No. Which brings me to the sentence stated by my guest, Aaron Brickman. Insanity is pervasive and obvious. Folks, if you can't see what's happening today, I don't know. So I know I've taken a lot of time out, more time than I advise my guests, and I apologize for that, but let's get right to Aaron Brickman. If you didn't listen to last week, the link will be in the program description box at HagmanReport.com for last week's episode with Steve Quayle. This is the rest of the remainder of the program is all his, talking about the current situation, how insane things are. We laid the biblical foundation again last week. Now, folks, nothing is set in stone. Nothing right now. What's going to happen? Nothing is set in stone. So a man I have a lot of respect for is, again, Aaron Brickman. He is the COO of a homeschool network, if you will. Skipper, there it is on your screen. Look into that as both an investment opportunity and a vehicle. But, you know, people want solutions. There it is. People want to know how they can help in today's world. There it is. Learn all you can about Skipper. All the links will be in the program description box at HagmanReport.com. And believe me, I'm 100% behind this initiative, as well as the Hagman Report and a lot of people I know. So without any further ado, Aaron Brickman. And Aaron, thank you for your patience and my apologies for taking more time than I thought I would. No, I think you're muted. Let's see.
It is your program, Doug, yeah. So I'm just honored to be here. You take as much time as you want, and thank you for having me again and for the people that wrote to you and wrote to me and enjoyed the program last week. I'm honored. I'm just calling it how I see it, how I believe the Lord you know, if there's anything of wisdom, it's because the Lord's speaking through me, because I can be a knucklehead a lot of days. And so my wife will attest to that, right?
Mine too, and, about me. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That keeps us humble. And I was happy with the program last week, and because I really wanted to set a really solid biblical foundation and really spur people on I have a completely different outlook, I think, than the average person. So I really just, that is not always right. Okay. So I'm not claiming that I have absolute truth, but I definitely want to spur people. I love talking to people. When I lived in the Caribbean overseas, what I thoroughly enjoyed about the Caribbean and the European mix was we could have diametrically opposed views and still have a great conversation over coffee and learn and bat ideas around. And you don't get that opportunity very much in the United States. America has a very groupthink mentality. There's an American recipe for success, and that is pervasive in all topics. And so really what the takeaway from this conversation, obviously everything I say, take to the Lord in prayer. That's always sound wisdom. But I really want these conversations to spur the audience to look at things differently and to really question their own thought process. So that's kind of my goal.
Just so you know, and the people know, I receive more emails from your appearance than many, many other guests. In fact, I can't remember how the last guest I received that many emails from about.
Yeah, honestly, that's kind of crazy. I look at that as kind of crazy, but I'll say that the Lord is at work then, if that's the case, because
yeah,
I don't do radio interviews. Nobody knows about me. I'm just doing business. That's my forte. If it wasn't for Steve and our relationship with you, I wouldn't be here. So,
and isn't that kind of the same with me going back a number of years? You know, I shouldn't be here, but yet here I am. But what you said last week resonated with so many people about where things are, where things could be going, and the fact that, you know what, there's a clash between two economic enterprises, or two economic two economies,
kingdoms.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes, yeah. And that resonated with so many people, and people looked at it, listened to you, and said, you know what, this is a man of God. This guy really has a different, but a really in-depth take on what's going on. So let's just continue with that. And you know, you said before, nothing is set in stone, and you know, about the death of the dollar, and because I wrote a piece 12 years ago about the death of the dollar, and you said something, you know, I think people might be surprised how things go with respect to that subject. So, you know, let's go wherever you want to take it. Because people are looking at this.
Yeah, let's talk about the death of the dollar. Before we talk about the death of the dollar, though, we've got to, this is my caveat for everything moving forward in life. I'm going to read you a Turkish proverb.
Okay.
I'm not known for Turkish proverbs, but this came along. This was timely. This was about a week ago I ran across this. When a clown moves into a palace, he doesn't become a king. The palace becomes a circus. Now, I don't know of a better description in the last 2 years than this proverb. And my takeaway with the videos that you were playing earlier, and this is on a daily basis, look, it's clown world at this point. And you have to, and I want everybody to hear me out on this, because I might say some things controversial, so just listen to me. We have never been we are at the edge of the abyss. Okay. I understand that your audience understands that. So I, in no way, what I'm going to say is making light of the situation. Okay. I understand our history better than the average person. I understand that this is an exceptional nation, or was an exceptional nation. Having said all that, and understanding that we are going into perilous times and there is a lot at risk, if you've ever dealt with demon possession, or if you've ever known somebody who was literally certifiable crazy, okay, had to be instituted, you have to step back and understand it for what it is. You can't sit there and have rational conversations with that individual. You literally will go insane yourself trying to engage in that insanity.
Okay.
And I see that happening to the right. Okay. Some of this stuff is beyond silly. I mean, it's beyond fakery. It almost, if this was a four-year-old, if what Biden was doing was a four-year-old, you would literally stop talking to him and walk out of the room. You would leave the four-year-old to himself.
True.
And yet somehow we're not doing that as our go-to behavior. When the Soviet Union fell, they still had Pravda. They still had their nightly news, okay? They were still propagandizing the people up until the very day the wall fell, okay? The question isn't when is the propaganda going to stop? When are they going to come to their senses? They're not. The question is, when do the people turn off the radio, turn off the television, stop reading the news, and walk away? And that was kind of the point of our last conversation, which is the two kingdoms. The more you opt out of their system, you begin to free yourself from their entanglement, and you begin to operate differently, and you literally are taking, and I don't want to get too deep into this conversation, but at a different level, all of life is energy. And I'm not talking about the New Age. And I'm literally talking about life forms, and what we devote our time and attention and speech and conduct to is energetic. And we can give and receive energy from others. Okay. You know this to be true if you've ever spoken in front of an audience. That audience will literally take on your attitude and demeanor. In leadership, if you begin to panic, your people around you begin to panic. So what I really think, you know, somebody said years ago, going when the digital revolution first began, they said that the information age would really be the age of distraction. And I have heard no better description of the last 20 years. In a lot of ways, it's total distraction. On a daily basis, it's 90%. That's not to say that it doesn't have consequence, but for the individual, it's distraction. And what it's doing is it's overwhelming their senses, and it's overwhelming their ability to think clearly. So we leap from one, it puts us into an emotional state versus a cognitive state. And that primary state, emotional state, is fear. Fear and worry. I don't worry about anything out of my control. So what is coming, you know, the silly video you played this morning, is there a great takeaway? Yeah, there's a takeaway from it. But what I would caution people, what's going to be imperative in the days ahead is how laser focused you are on that which is paramount and that which matters. And I'm telling you right now, there's too much coming at the populace. You cannot give your time and attention to every issue. You can't do it. You can't be a generalist and survive. You're going to have to dial into what the Lord has for you, pay attention, and spend more time. I will tell you this in business, and you know this to be true, Doug. If you're concentrated more on your enemy or more on your competition versus delivering a sound product or service to your customers, you will go bankrupt.
Absolutely.
Okay. And I find that that's what the right and Christians typically are engaged in. They're way more concerned with the schemes of the devil than the plans of God. So,
that's a powerful statement, by the way. Way more concerned with the schemes of the devil than the plans of God. Boy, you hit that nail right on the head there. And we have to change that focus. And which you said earlier, Steve Bannon always talks about signal versus noise. We get a lot of noise, but we have to focus on the signal to steal a line from Bannon. And I think that's what makes you so important, and that's why people realize what you're saying is important, is because your focus, your laser-like focus, is on what's important as opposed to what's just chaff out there. Go ahead, sir.
So to follow on that, and this is not an original thought to me. In fact, I don't believe in original thought, but that's a whole nother conversation. I heard years ago it said that, and I was guilty of this, and I am still guilty of this to a degree, but it's definitely in my consciousness now, that we are in a room with 20, 30, 40 different radios turned on. And one of those radios is God. And when we want to hear God, we try and turn the volume up on that broadcast. And you can't hear clearly. What we really need to be doing is turning off all the other radios. And as soon as we start limiting that type of signal and signal interference, it'll come through crystal clear. Now, I'm not saying all you're supposed to do is spend all your time in prayer and don't listen to Hagman and don't, I mean, obviously that's, you know, it's a little balance. But really right now what we're having is just massive distortion. There's so many voices and it's a ping pong effect. And by the end of the day, you're worn out, exhausted, frustrated, confused, or just downright fearful. And I think I said this to you off air, and it bears repeating, because I do want to get into more of the economics for today. But to just conclude this line of thought, I want people to understand that the news is demonic prophecy. I want you to think about that. It is demonic prophecy. Agenda 2030 is demonic prophecy. When the UN comes out and tells you their next 10, 20, 30 year plan, it's demonic prophecy. When the White House utters their nonsense, it's clown world. It doesn't make it real. Okay. Now I know that that's foreign to most people because we think because we say it, it makes it so. The only thing it makes it so is your perception. You believe it to be so, but that is not ultimate reality. And they know this. The powers that be are trying to alter reality, because if they can say it and you can receive it as truth, you will alter your behavior and make it so. But it doesn't ultimately make it so. Okay, so you can change the definition of a recession. Okay. Still not going to help people get their job back. Still not going to help people afford their mortgage, keep their house, afford private school. Okay. And I think that that's the insanity of where we're at. So we've got to stop listening to them. Stop giving them your time and attention. I'm telling you, they will freak out just like a four-year-old throwing a tantrum. Will stop throwing the tantrum when mom and dad walk out of the room. That kid is not going to sit there and continue to stomp and yell and scream for two more hours if he doesn't have an audience. In regards to the demonic prophecy, I appreciate the fact that they're telling us what they're getting ready to do. That is of extreme value. But that doesn't mean God allows them to, and it doesn't mean that it is written in stone, that this is the Ten Commandments, and thus it will be. We have a say in it, and I believe that the Lord is going to raise up men and women to challenge it. Look, if it was set in stone, it would have already occurred. And you know this, Doug, how many times have they tried to trigger World War III in the Middle East over the last 15 years?
Oh, many times.
Many times. This stuff is not set in stone, and they are not on schedule. They are way behind schedule. Anybody who's been paying attention to them for the last 20, 30 years knows that they are way behind schedule on a host of issues. So that gives me great hope that they can be, look, we can interrupt these plans. They could, this stuff can be upended, but it really is going to come down to us acting individually, but yet at the same time, it's that corporate effect. It's that overwhelming effect. When enough individuals arise, history does change. With that being said, is kind of a setting the table for Clown World. Let me say this one last thing, and I do think that this is important. And I know, Doug, you've probably had a similar experience. When I was in, when I went through the military and I went through some schools and I went through a Ranger indoctrination program, which is basically trying to get into Ranger Battalion, extremely tough, extremely difficult, not as difficult as Ranger Battalion, I learned a lot going through those experiences. And here was the secret to getting through very, 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 very extraordinarily difficult times. And I think, this is my takeaway for what we're about to go through. I got through it by grinning and bearing it. But that wasn't the right. That only will get you so far. Because there is a level of pain and suffering at which nobody can just grin and bear it. Okay. So I had the wrong response. I got through it, but I could not do it for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. So my hat goes off to the operators out there. I mean, if you see an operator, I want to tell you what, Doug, you see an operator in their 30s? Yeah, dude. My people have no idea what those guys are almost superhuman. It's ridiculous. But here's what was common among all those guys that overcame and flourished. They didn't just grin and bear it. They embraced it and laughed the entire time. I remember doing crazy things that were just terrifying. And I'd look over, and there was always this group of guys. They were joking at the most inopportune times. They were, you know, it's life and death, and they got a smile on their face. And they weren't being reckless. They understood. They understood what was at stake. But it was at the same time they were prepared. They were diligent. They were working hard. But their attitude was, they embraced it, and there was humor in it. And I think that where we're going with, and I don't get upset most of the days listening to the news. I understand how perilous it is, but I also understand it's silliness, Doug. The conversations that you're having to report now are totally insane. It's just insanity. And we have to, on one hand, just smile, laugh, and not take it so seriously that it's set in stone and we're all going to get fed to the lions. Okay. So that's kind of the way I've seen a lot of people. I've seen the victory. I've seen what it takes to be victorious and an overcomer, and you got to have a sense of humor. God has a sense of humor. God says that the wicked, he sits there and he laughs at them and he mocks them when their dread comes. Tells me he has a sense of humor. Okay, I think that's in Proverbs. Maybe it's in Proverbs. Yeah, I think it's probably in the first part of Proverbs. So there's a time and a place where the Lord will literally mock them, okay, and make fun of them as they go to their destruction. And so I'm not going to take, I mean, look, whoever's occupying the White House at this point, whatever. If we don't give them, if we opt out of the system, which we're going to get to here shortly, and we start turning our attention to things that matter, here's the deal. For the last 2 years, you've already had all this craziness coming out of the White House, and we've seen in the last 2 months the Supreme Court numerous times strike this stuff down.
Right.
Thank you, Jesus. Like, literally, thank you, God. Okay. So they're going to do their January 6th song and dance and pony show. They're going to do Bannon. They're going to do, you know, try and prevent Trump. They're going to do what they've always done. It's what are we going to do that's different? Because they're going to do the same thing. They're going to do, their modus operandi is not going to change.
I agree with that.
So let's get on to, let's talk about the death of the dollar. That's got to be fun. My take on the dollar is this. The dollar is going to go probably most likely to all-time highs. It's going to go parabolic. It's going to go higher than anybody can imagine before it dies. And here's why. Think of the dollar. The dollar is the world's reserve currency. Think of the dollar as a crow's nest at the top of a mast on a sailing ship. We've all seen the pirate movies, so I think we know what we're talking about. Everybody can have that vision, visual. As the other currencies, as the empire dies, and make no mistake, we're talking about the death of an empire. As the empire dies, historically, all empires die at the outer edges, at the periphery. Okay. Even Rome died at the periphery before, you know, literally Rome as a city falls. Okay. So we're going to start seeing that in the satellite nations that are tied to the dollar and that are part of this empire, part of our sphere of influence. Okay. And as that happens, everybody's going to run to the dollar as safety. All right. So you're going to see the dollar actually go up, and it is happening up. And I'm not saying in purchasing power. So this is very, you have to understand when we're talking about the dollar, there is the dollar as a purchasing power, how many goods it can purchase you today. And there is the dollar as a U.S. dollar index, which is a basket of currencies. It trades against the won, the euro, the yen. Okay. And that basket of currencies, the dollar is continuing to strengthen. I mean, I think we're at 20-year highs today.
But we're comparing that to other currencies, though, correct? In other words,
correct.
This is like the I've heard it said, we're the dirty or the cleanest shirt in the laundry basket, considering, you know, other currencies. Go ahead.
So, but what that is going to do will have catastrophic consequences on the rest of the world. So there's a flood of money into what is going to be perceived as the safest place, which is the United States. And if you look at it on a relative basis, we are. I mean, look at Japan as a basket case. China, are you kidding me? You parking money in China? You're going to go to Europe? So the money has to go somewhere. And that gets into global currency flows. The money has to go somewhere. And under stress, it's going to go to the center. As the empire is crumbling, it's going to go to the center. It's going to go into the dollar. Now, what that's going to do to the world is going to be catastrophic. Because all the emerging markets will get destroyed. The third world will be destroyed because all their international loans are denominated in dollars. Which means as the dollar is strengthening, those debt loads that all those countries have taken out are going to become unbearable. So if we're talking about the dollar climbing 25, 30, 50%, guess what happened to the emerging markets debt load? They can't pay it. They can't service it. Collapse. What the Russians and the Chinese and the BRICS and all these nations that have been banding together, and they've literally been building the alternative system for at least the last, since at least 08. Okay. And there's a lot that has to go in to getting all this stuff set up for disconnection and to transfer from the dollar-based system to a new commodity-backed system. That will be in part for self-survival. The third world will do it out of self-survival because they won't be able to bear the weight of the debt repayment in U.S. dollars. So this is very counterintuitive. You might see the dollar, or you should see that there's a lot of smart guys, way smarter than me when it comes to currencies, that believe we will be at all-time highs on the U.S. dollar, and then it will be destroyed overnight. That's very counterintuitive. We would think that a rising stock market is bullish, right? You wouldn't expect that that the stock market would die by going up, okay? And by that same reason, you wouldn't expect that the death of the dollar means the dollar is going to send the dollar to new all-time highs. Now, at the same time, what's confusing about this, Doug, is that the purchasing power, which is what you and I interact with on a daily basis, is clearly losing strength. Okay. So this is where it's very counterintuitive. You can have a strong dollar, a very strong dollar internationally. And by the way, the strong dollar is going to kill our export market, what little is left of the export market, because it's going to make any corporation on Wall Street that's trying to sell services and goods abroad even more expensive with a strong dollar. What's your thoughts on the dollar? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense. But what you said, so I like the distinction between the purchasing power versus the position of the dollar amid other currencies. The distinction there is important. But what you said there about the dollar rising, dollar climbing, and then overnight being destroyed, really interesting. Because I think a lot of people are just waiting every day right now. Well, when's the dollar going to collapse? When is everything going to go to, that's kind of what people are waiting for right now.
And if you look at, and you're absolutely right, and if you go back to the 08 crisis and you look at the dollar's been strengthening for like 10 years. The dollar continues to appreciate. So there's definitely, the people pounding the table calling for the death of the dollar will be right in the end, but how that comes about is of extreme importance. And so I think I and a number of others are painting a different picture than waiting for the dollar to collapse tomorrow. Look, the euro has to collapse before the dollar. Now, the euro, it could be argued, is on the verge of collapse. The euro is at a 20-year low. It's at parity with the dollar. It's basically plus or minus a point where it was when the euro as an official currency note was rolled out. If it loses the support at parity, it could flash crash to its inset value, which was around 80, 83 to a U.S. dollar. Now watch this, Doug. If you saw a euro go into a catastrophic tailspin, that is what will be like rocket fuel to a climbing U.S. dollar, because that makes up, I believe, 58% of the dollar basket is euro based. So with a crashing euro, you would see the dollar just scream higher.
Wow. Okay.
So that is something that I'm watching and when you get into the euro, obviously, that the bulk of the euro, the bulk of the GDP, the bulk of the productivity coming out of Europe that's sustaining. Look, the euro would be dead if it wasn't for the Germans. Okay. So the Germans are keeping the euro together, but with the problems that they're having now with Russia and natural gas and how that's going to affect them this winter, we'll see if the euro can survive this winter with the Germans.
Okay.
So to me, the currency, to me, currency collapse is not definitive yet. Financial collapse is coming again. You know, it's kind of like 2008. 2008 was a financial collapse. It wasn't the end of the system, though. They were able to kick that can. So, but once it gets into currency collapse, you're probably looking at the system collapse. Okay.
So just to be clear, you have a distinction between financial collapse and currency collapse. An important distinction.
Yeah, I mean, look, a financial collapse, you had, look at what housing did in 2008. Look how many people lost their homes in 2008. Look at what the average 401k portfolio, I mean, that was a financial collapse. Millions of people, more than millions of people affected. Millions of people lost their jobs. And it took years to recover. And it only recovered because they papered it over, but be that as it may, even then it took years to recover. But we were what, 4 or 5 hours from martial law?
Yeah.
We were 4 or 5 hours on that Friday from the entire banking system locking up. Okay. That would have taken it to a whole nother level. Okay. You can have a 9/11 style crash. You can have even a 2008 crash. You can have an 87 and 29 crash, even as bad as 29 was. We could have a 29 crisis again without it spilling over into systemic collapse, but it would have to, once it gets into the banking system, it didn't get into the banking system in 08, or when it got into the banking system, they were able to print enough money and to kick the can. But what we didn't see was a total European collapse. If we get a total European collapse because of the derivatives and all the banking and all the banks in the US and Japan, and everybody's interlinked. So if you get a systemic problem in Europe, it's going to spill over. It has to spill over to the American banking. And I think that's where the real concern is. It's not, does the stock market lose 50% of its value? It's, does that get into the bond market? And more importantly, does it get into the currency market? The stock market, and I don't have the official numbers right now, but the stock market is nothing. You know, I know the average person worries about their 401k portfolio, but as a size, the bond market is 4, 5, 6 times the size of the stock market. And the currency market, oh my gosh, when you're talking about currencies, you're talking about the life and death of a nation, about a central bank going under. Not corporations or investors going under. You're talking about a central bank. So when we start getting into extreme volatility in currencies, that's when nations can go under. And that to me is the question over the next 12 months is not, are we going to be in a financial, not is the stock market going to be in trouble, or is housing going to have to correct? It's, does the euro survive? And if not, does that spill into the American dollar? If it spills into the American dollar, then all bets are off and it'll be a brave new world.
Maybe this is out of order here, but there's all this talk about the creation of a digital currency on the other side of whatever happens, or even to prevent what could happen. In some circles.
I don't pay any attention to their, what is it, CBDs or their digital currency.
Okay.
Again, are they planning it? Yes, of course they're planning it. Would they like to take us there? Of course they would. The thing that I don't think this is just my takeaway from my time in the military. You know, the famous saying that no plan survives first contact with the enemy. That doesn't mean you don't have your plans. You know this, Doug, right? It doesn't mean you don't have your training. It doesn't mean, but oh my gosh, people have no idea how fast things, when something turns into chaos, all bets are off. in trying to have supercomputers anticipate 7.5 billion people, hopes, dreams, desires, reactions, world leaders react. I mean, come on. This is the ultimate hubris that the devil has conned these world leaders into believing, is that they can account for every single contingency. That's insane. That's laughable. When this thing goes south, you don't know. You can be the best trained military, and when you have to go door to door to take a city, good luck.
True.
Okay. The casualties, I don't care how well trained you are, the casualties, we saw it in World War II. That street fighting in Europe, door to door, oh my gosh. The best soldiers can get killed. The worst soldiers can survive. It's totally up to the Lord. Do they have their plans for a digital currency? Yeah, they do have their plans for a digital currency. But look, if people don't opt in, I'm telling you, it's up to us. If we don't opt in, how's it going to get off the ground? And trust me, the Russians and the Chinese are not going along with their digital currency system.
True.
Now, they might try and offer their own, but I think they're going to a commodity-backed system. I think this is going to come down to East and West. In the West, the West has just some very old and tried, it's wash, rinse, repeat. There's nothing original in their thinking. And so I am not worried about a digital currency system at this point.
Because people that I talk to, I get emails every day saying, well, this is the ultimate surveillance system, this digital currency, this could, but you're not worried about that at this point.
I'm totally not worried about it. Oh, but look. Oh, it would be the book of Revelation. Let's not kid ourselves. It would be the ultimate surveillance. Look, there's... and if you think you have problems with inflation today, oh my gosh. I mean, at least there's some cash still in the system. Oh my gosh, if we go to just pure digital, yeah, it would be 1984. It would be a brave new world. It would be craziness. But I think when we get into they're in a very, people need to understand, this is a very, very dangerous time in history. It's extremely dangerous. When you destabilize a system by design, with intent, and that's what these guys are doing, you might have your proposed solution, but that doesn't mean that the public embraces it. Okay. And when you introduce chaos into a system, I'm telling you, it is impossible to account for all variables.
Okay. And I see that. Okay. So the enemy is making their plans. God is laughing, in a sense. God's laughing. The enemy's making their plans. But the enemy is not taking into account the outlying factors that, hey, this reaction, people may not go along, civil disobedience, and worse is what you're saying, I think, right?
I think history is replete. History is full of examples where it didn't go according to plan.
Okay.
Okay. History is full of examples where revolutions should not have been successful because they had a minority. I mean, the Cuban Fidel's revolution in Cuba is proof of that. Very small numbers. Okay. But the people didn't know that. So I think when you're looking at destabilizing systems, that's why I get excited. I'm like, you guys are going to blow up the system. You guys are going to create, whether you can argue that the system is already at the end of its lifespan and they know it. And so they're going to just blow it and offer new solutions and hope that in the chaos and in the turmoil and in the fear that they're spreading, people are just going to shut down their thought process and accept it? Are there a lot of people who will do it? Of course there are. But look, when you get into a digital, where they're going with all this system is it's an all or nothing proposition. Okay. This isn't where, you know, 60% use digital and 40% don't. I mean, there, it's going to have to be an all or nothing. I don't think they've even contemplated. I think the vax was proof that there was way more people that opted out and resisted than they thought. And that was just the vax. I wasn't talking about their money. I mean, yes, it was their body, but it wasn't their livelihood. It wasn't their money. Look, when you take somebody's wealth, when you take their livelihood away, all bets are off on how they're going to respond. They're definitely going to respond with anger.
Yeah.
What form that takes is, look, let's be very clear about the government. The government can only respond one way, and they're really good at it. The government is trained, nobody beats the government when it comes to violence. Trust me, I was trained. We were using weapons that I didn't see in the public domain for 20 years, Doug. And I wasn't even at a high level. They can employ weapons that are magical. They have violence down. That's what they can respond to. Okay. What they can't respond to and what they have a hard time understanding is when people opt out, when people form new alternative systems. Okay. And when there's not just two choices, when there's 1,000 choices, what are they going to plug? How are they going to deal with that? Okay. So they like to, centralized authority likes to deal with centralized authority. What they can't deal with is fragmentation. What they can't deal with is all the splinter groups and everybody going their own way. Okay. And that's why there's constantly controlled opposition. That's why this whole R&D, Republican, Democrat, rich, poor, black, white, it's always a binary choice, right? They can deal with that. So,
man, that makes so much sense. Okay, that you contextualize that in my view in a very palatable manner. Okay, I'm starting to understand this. Now I'm starting to understand why you're encouraged as opposed to, oh man, look at all this stuff happening. I get it. I'm starting to get this. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
Yeah. No. I want that feedback. That's Okay, so here's my take on, no, we're kind of all over the place, but here's my take on the average American. The average American needs to look at the death of the dollar as the only chance in hope for this nation to survive. That's right. You heard me say it. Let me explain. What we have been taught in school and what we have come to love, and I'm talking about the legitimate, the guys your age, even the guys my age, I'm talking about the 40 on up, okay, that had a decent, you know, education. Maybe, you know, maybe they don't remember their history, but they took American history and they took, you know, civics and whatever you wanted to call it. Okay, we love our country. We served in different capacities. Whatever that is, that vision of America no longer exists. Okay, I hate to be the bearer of bad news. Hasn't existed for quite some time. But it's a good story. And it is a true story. It's what this nation once was. But I'm telling you, this nation, after the World War II, became an empire. That the history books are clear about. Okay. And we might still be a republic in name, but make no mistake, we operate as an empire. That means that everything we do is to extend the empire. Every decision made, both domestically and through foreign policy, is to extend the empire. The dollar is the tip of the spear. That's how we control the world. Anybody who understands false weights and measures from a biblical point of view, perspective, and I won't get into that today, but the dollar is the epitome of false weights and measures. Okay. The dollar, and we back the dollar up with the military. The military is nothing now but the enforcement arm for the dollar. Okay. And you can study Iraq and Libya, a few other countries when they wanted to go to gold and away from dollar-based system, what happened to them.
True.
All right, I want to say this. This is going to be controversial, but think about it. We are living in an antebellum period in the South. Okay. And if you know your pre-Civil War history in the South and the economic structure, we were able to farm and have plantations in the South. We had a different business model than the North or the rest of the world because of slavery. Okay. Just or not, that's the way it was. And there was an extreme advantage financially to paying very little for labor versus productivity gains. Well, if you think that was unjust, can somebody explain to me the last 20 years of a dollar-based system that literally is built upon Chinese slave labor?
No, good point.
Our entire lifestyle is supported by Chinese labor.
I agree with that. Yep.
The things that you order on Amazon, the things that you buy in Walmart, this isn't Amazon or Walmart. This is where the manufacturing of American products takes place. So I don't care if you're buying it local from, I don't care who you're buying it from. These products are coming out of China. And do you think that they're paying them Nike, Apple, all this stuff? Okay. What is happening in the third world with the BRICS, Russia, and China is they're done. This is the slaves revolting. They don't want to be slaves to a dollar-based system anymore. So when they revolt, when they overthrow that economic structure, I'm telling you, it will be more catastrophic than what happened to the South. The way of life that we have enjoyed, it's not the moral equivalent. So I'm not saying you and I, Doug, are the moral equivalent of a plantation owner in Georgia in 1850. But the economic model is actually more pervasive, is obviously much larger than what took place then, which means that when it topples, its effects will be more profound. Okay. What does that look like? Well, it means that there won't be as much choice. It means that the prices will reflect a truer value of the labor input that is required. So we're going to have,
that's not a bad thing though. I mean,
it is for us, since the American economy is a consumer economy.
well, true.
I mean, yeah, put it to you this way. Okay. Let's put it a different way. I mean, even though you and I are adults, okay. The last 20 years, the opulence that you and I have been able to attain on our, and I'm not saying we're working harder, we're making any more money. The choice of goods in the last 20 years versus the choice in goods between now versus 2000.com boom, and that's when the WTO admitted China, right? Okay, to 1990, 1980, it's astronomical, the difference in quality of goods, choice of goods, and the price.
Agreed.
It's allowed us to have a lifestyle that we didn't even have 20 or 30 or 40 years ago. And what I'm saying is prepare for that to go away. Okay, prepare for either the manufacturing, the prices to go through the roof, which means the choice comes down, or we have to bring manufacturing back to the States. Well, oh my gosh, can you imagine how much a iPhone is going to cost if it has to be manufactured in America?
But isn't that the proper way? Wouldn't that solve?
No, it's. I'm not saying it's long term. Look, long term, if you want the health of the nation, so we were talking about. I'm just wanting people to understand what is coming. What is coming is not just a finance. What's coming is a total reorientation of the economic system that is going to directly impact our choice, availability of goods. Now, how we come out of that and return to being a nation, to being a sovereign nation, is, yeah, it would be nice if we had our own production capability in the United States, not just from a national defense security, you know, standpoint, but just livelihood, just getting blue collar workers back to work, right? So long term, is that long term smart? Is that healthy for the nation? Yes. But there is an interim period between now and then that the average American isn't even thinking about. What we're talking about is if when the dollar dies, globalism is dead. Globalism, in my opinion, is already dying. I think COVID is the start of globalism dying.
Wow. That's kind of a controversial statement, because I hear people saying that globalism resurged or got its resurgence from the pandemic.
Well, look at what Chinese manufacturing is. Chinese manufacturing shutting down? Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Are the supply chains, this is what's fascinating. Have the supply chains improved in the last 2 years or gotten worse?
Okay.
That's telling, dude, there's something. They broke stuff it took them, my gosh, we didn't even get globalism kickstarted until 2000 when China was admitted to WTO. And they were working on it for decades ahead of that. I'm telling you, globalism is not a light switch. You don't just turn it off and turn it back on. You don't just, when you break these supply chains, when you break manufacturing processes, when you kill skilled labor, dude, it takes years to try and reconstruct and put that together. Okay? And what we're now seeing, and let me tell you, Russia, if you're listening to what the Foreign Office and Ministry is saying, they're telling you globalism is dead. Now, they're not using the term globalism. They're using the term unipolar. They are done with a unipolar world. They are talking multipolar. We are now talking regional blocks. Okay? That's the opposite direction of globalism.
True.
Okay. So if you believe that the powers that be want to destabilize the dollar, offer a digital currency, and continue business as usual and advance towards globalism, and the entire East is saying no way. So right now, my money's on the East. I think Quayle's money is on the East. Well, if that's true, then globalism is in trouble. And what that means is that our lifestyle, we need to prepare. You and I might have been anti-globalists, and we are, I am anti-globalist, and I think
yes.
you are.
Yes.
But the benefits that you and I have had at the table for the last 20 years, we've had all the benefit of globalism without the overt oppression that we know is coming through globalism. And what the East is saying is, hey, we're not going to, we've already had the oppression. We're done. We're done with your globalists. We're done with your US dollar. We're done with a unipolar world. We're going to fight you in Asia. We're going to fight you in the Pacific. We're going to fight you in Eastern Europe. Like, we're done. And I think that that needs to be understood, that you're what is at stake here is a vision. And in Putin, people, if you're not listening to Putin's speeches, if you're not listening to what they are telling you in no uncertain terms, what the fight is about, it's extraordinary. And I understand why it's very hard to, those are speeches are hard to come by, and most of the average Westerner hasn't listened to them, and they're certainly not going to be reported in the Western media, because he's very blunt about, did you see, Doug, did you see yesterday what this, what one of the Spetsnaz commanders said?
I did not, no.
Okay, this is clown, we started off the conversation talking about clown world. Let me pull this up real quick.
Folks, this is fascinating. Aaron Brickman is my guest. Wow, a qualified, in my view, a qualified financial, I'll use the word expert, but financial guru, knows what he's talking about. And to say that globalism is dying or dead, controversial to say the least, but man, he is making sense. We've got about 9 minutes left. I can't believe how quickly time has gone. This gentleman is really turning things on its head. It's very interesting.
Hey, Spetsnaz. Now, you know, Doug, who's Spetsnaz?
Sure.
I mean, okay. We're talking hardcore Russian special forces. I mean, these guys are hardcore. Russian Spetsnaz commander yesterday was quoted, and in fact, there's a video of him saying it on Russian television, that NATO is the army of the Antichrist and Russia is the army of Jesus. That's a quote.
Wow.
Now, I'm not picking sides on that. I'm not saying he's right. What I'm saying is what they are perceiving. This is not about Ukraine. This is not about some territory. They understand this is existential. At least for the Russians, it's existential. They will not go into the value system that the West is exporting. And they are drawing a very hard line. Okay. And they are speaking very clearly to their people that it is an antichrist system.
It's hard to disagree with that.
When you start building churches in Russia on every single military base and you ban LGBTQ, RSTUV, and transgender and homosexual literature, I can't find a problem with that either. So it's not to say that Russia, look, I think history, people, and this gets into binary choices again. When you study history, it's not black and white. It's everybody's gray. They have, not everybody's gray, but usually there's enough gray that it's not absolute. And that doesn't mean that Russia is, the new city on a hill. And somehow, they're going to be the greatest thing since Christianity broke out. But they're certainly closer. They understand the value of the family. They're preserving the family, and they're fighting against what the West is embracing. And for that, they're definitely more biblically based on that one subject than we are. I do find it fascinating And this is where we're in. When I talk about clown world, I'm talking about the literal inverting of all things you and I have come to know.
Yes.
We have the West, where Christianity was born. Christianity has thrived in the West, has really historically had a hard time in the East. And we are now seeing it die in the West, and we're seeing the nations, communist nations like China, which is having a thriving Christian community underground, which is a whole other subject, but because of communism is super flourishing. And then in a former Soviet nation like Russia, they're now officially building churches on all the military bases. That's clown world. It's literally where I'm here to tell people this. Whenever the book of Revelation appears, and you know, whatever, whoever is alive to see that, that remains to be seen. I'm not going to argue and debate that. But I'm going to tell people it's not what you think. It's going to be radically, it's going to, don't take all your biases into it. It's, you really need to read this stuff with an open heart and an open mind to what the Lord wants to reveal. Because I'll tell you, Doug, if you had described the state of this world, if you and I, if somebody had described the state of this world, both Russia and the United States, 40 years ago to us, you and I would have laughed at them and thought they were crazy.
100%.
Okay, and yet here we are, and everybody thinks it's normal. Okay,
it's that just not tells what you me think. That wow.
It's not what you think.
Yeah.
We're going to have to, you know, as the famous saying in the Matrix movie, you're going to have to free your mind. You're going to have to stop putting limits on yourself, limits on God, limits on what can be, and really be open to different understandings, new interpretation, and really have. God's going to direct. I mean, God's directing my wife and I into things I never thought he would direct me, doing what I thought I was going to be doing. But it's been the best time of my life. You know, he's the author and perfecter of my faith. He has a plan for my life, so it's going to be better than what I can envision, but it in no way is going to be what I envision. And that's what I tell when I talk to young people. I'm like, it's great to have plans, and you need to go to school, and you need to, like, seriously, all about discipline and training. I'm just here to clue you in. Your life is not going to turn out the way you envision it.
Especially if you are obedient to God and you listen to the answer to your prayers of what we know, what do I do? And you follow that direction, spiritual.
Well, you're not, your life's not going to end up, here's the thing. Your life is not going to end up the way you think, regardless of, it helps to be obedient. But look, if you're disobedient, I can assure you your life is not going to end up to be the way you think, because now you're serving Satan. Okay, so you're contrary to popular opinion, you are not the captain of your own fate.
Mm.
You are either a child of God or you're a child of Satan. He has a plan for you, and God has a plan for you. Your plans, both parties are taking very little into account in regards to you getting a vote. And so I think that that's where humanity falls into these traps, and we waste so much time and energy pounding our head, doing things that we're not supposed to be doing or totally misaligned with. It's just a mess. I talk to 40 and 50-year-olds that only then are they actually discovering what is their passion, what they're good at, and what they were really created to do. The first 30, 40 years was banging their head against the wall, trying to open doors they weren't supposed to, go down roads they weren't supposed to, work for people they weren't supposed to. I mean, it's just,
I've been there. We only have about 50 seconds left. I can't believe how quickly this has gone. 30 seconds left. I apologize. I want to thank you. What an incredibly informative, folks, you're going to have to listen to this again. 15 seconds. Words of wisdom.
Oh my gosh. Well, I guess my words of wisdom is, I guess you'll have to tune in again, and maybe we'll get to more practical stuff.
Let's do that. Aaron Brickman, you are, I'll tell you what, you're one of my favorite people to speak with. What a lot of knowledge. Thank you, Mr. Brickman, for your time today. I appreciate you. Appreciate you very much.
Thank you, Doug. Right. Appreciate it. Thank you, Doug.
All right, folks.